You are listening to the oneofus.net podcast network. Oneofus.net and all of the shows on it are 100% subscriber supported. Please consider becoming a subscriber to oneofus.net. Keep the site and all of our great shows going and get some terrific bonus content as well. You tell me to start. I'll start this review when I want. That was terrible. I'm sorry. I can't rap. I'm white as hell.
I was trying to go over you like the Beastie Boys do, but you just fucked it all up, Chris.
Yo, Chris, your game ain't tight.
There are only three really, truly great white rappers, and that is the Beastie Boys. I'm sorry. I can't think. Is there another? Because I can't think
Eminem?
Of
Eminem praised the Beastie Boys, though, for an influence, actually, on several occasions.
I'm sure he has.
Sure.
Well, as well he should. No, I'm not going to totally shit all over Eminem, but there's no comparison in my mind. For the Beastie Boys started as basically a joke band. That first album, License to Ill, was... I remember it came out. I was in high school. Everyone I knew fucking bought it. It would not stop playing. It was omnipresent. It was everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I got so sick of Fight for Your Right to Party, I wanted to punch anybody in the face who started singing or playing it. And that happened a lot. So I had anger issues. I just kind of ignored it when it came out. I was, as much as I could. I was like, I don't really like this much, but all my friends like it. I can't really get away from it, but whatever. And then Paul's Boutique came out, and I ignored it at first until they all started saying, man, this just isn't as good. And I was like, all right, maybe I'll check it out. And I was like, wow, this is great. In retrospect, years later, I've softened on the original License to Ill quite a bit and actually enjoy it now. But regardless, the Beastie Boys evolved into something that was less of that white guy rap group that's kind of jokey into a group of people who were taken extremely seriously by absolutely everybody in the industry and left quite a legacy of charity and influence. And now here they are. One of their main members, their founding member, Adam, died a few years ago of cancer. Very sad, very big deal. Yeah. And they had said, yeah, okay, so we're not, there was no Beastie Boys without all three of us. So the two remaining members got together with Spike Jonze, their long-term collaborator, filmmaker who directed quite a few of their videos, and said, we want to do a stage show where we just kind of talk about, with all the footage we have as well, the history of the Beastie Boys, which is quite an amusing story. And Apple Plus are the ones who got their hand on this sucker.
It's basically a two-hour condensed version of the book that they put out last year as well.
Yeah, no, it's a two-hour Beastie Boy TED Talk.
And here to talk about the TED Talk is myself, Chris Cox, and then joining me is Justin Zarian.
Hey, everybody.
Bradley Martin.
Hello.
And Mike, the editor.
What up? What up?
For some reason, he prefers to be called that than his actual name, and that's fine. You know, nicknames
well,
being what they
mostly
are.
Mostly, there's more than one Mike, which more often than not, there is.
That's true. We do have a surfeit of Mikes. The place is lousy with Mikes. I was a big Beastie Boys fan, Paul's Boutique on. In fact, I just am doing that stupid, like, 10 albums that were super formative and changed your life thing, like everyone else is on social media. And my entry for today was, appropriately enough, Check Your Head, which was a huge fucking deal to me when that album came out.
For me, it was Hello Nasty. That was my entry point.
I was super excited about this. This was going to play South by Southwest as one of their big things with Michael Diamond, Adam Horowitz showing up to talk about the film. This is one of the most anticipated things at a South by Southwest festival for me. And then rug gets pulled out from under all of us. Mm-hmm. All of our big events get canceled. That didn't happen. But like I said, Apple TV picked it up. This is, you call this a TED Talk. I don't think it's necessarily fair. This type of stage show has been going on long.
It's a really well-produced TED Talk.
But I'm saying this sort of thing has been going on long before there was such a thing as TED Talks.
Oh, sure.
It's two guys on stage telling a story with photos and video and comedy. And it is a really interesting story, the story of the Beastie Boys. And I wonder, honestly, if you had no interest in the Beastie Boys, if this would even be entertaining to you.
And that's kind of where I'm coming in with this, because, like, I really like the Beastie Boys. I wouldn't consider myself, like, a fanatic. I mean, I think the earliest memory I have of the Beastie Boys was in elementary school where they did, like, toned down parody versions of the song Girls, which I'm just like, ugh. Even then, I was a little bit questionable with that song. I like the Beastie Boys quite a bit, but I also have the problem where I come in going, yeah, I'm not a fanatic, so what do I learn about the Beastie Boys from this? And to be fair, I learned a lot. Maybe not as much as I thought I would. I thought I would get some more insightful stories, but on the whole, it's a fairly light approach to the Beastie Boys. You know, like, they're obviously not going to dig into any really deep, dark, nasty history. There's not really a whole lot to say about them.
Gives it its enough attention. It doesn't dwell on it nearly as much as it would if you were reading the book, for example, which has entire chapters about, like, the ups and downs. Whereas, you know, this is a movie. We got it in a slash stage show. We got to kind of move it along at just the right pace.
Yeah, this one's more there to entertain than it is to inform, I would argue.
It's more about their sense of friendship that was so strong between these three guys and how much it lasted throughout all this, which is a story you almost never hear. I mean, even bands like the Rolling Stones, you never hear about they can't stop just hanging out with each other on the outside. You know, they're probably not the best of friends.
No.
These guys were absolutely the best of friends, the closest buddies till the end, and still are. And it's kind of about that, and it's kind of about the grief and honor they felt for their fallen friend. It's just making this a really fitting tribute. And it barely touches on the fact that they really feel that Rick Rubin and Russell Simmons, who produced their first album, completely were manipulating them and took advantage of them.
Oh, yeah. They made that pretty clear even then. They're just like, they do everything shy of just like raise a middle finger when they mention their name in certain points of this. But that's the thing that definitely their shadow and Adam's shadow especially are very felt throughout a lot of this show. Like, I'm surprised they just have a picture of Adam throughout the entire stage show just there with them next to their stools.
Bradley, are you just rocking out in the back while we're talking? Are you like you listening to Intergalactic?
No, I agree with what you said, Chris. It starts off as a loving tribute to the Beastie Boys, but quickly, I'd say 3 minutes in, Mike D and Horowitz are up there saying, yeah, we're actually here to actually pay a loving tribute to an actual musical genius, because they always come across like they were two guys just fucking around with music. And they're saying that Yaut, their friend that passed away in 2012, the third, rather, first Beastie Boys, was the real genius behind everything. And I really like that, because like you said, most bands are at each other's throats, especially 30 years later.
They talk about how Adam Yaut knows about this like interesting technique to do something with music or art. And they're like, we hang around with this guy all the time. There was no internet. How the fuck did he know how to do this?
They're like all these things. He would constantly be coming up with this cool archaic tricks and stuff, or things that are like cutting edge. And yeah, it's like, where would he? We're with him every day. Where is he getting this from?
You know, the word on the street, guys. He's like, we were just on the street with you. What word did you hear that we didn't?
Yeah, were you listening to someone? Yeah, y'all were ordering a sandwich, and this dude came up to me, and he was like, have you heard about Tape to Tape? I'm just saying.
Those parts are actually really fascinating, and I actually would say the second half of the show really got a lot more in-depth on some very, like, interesting dramatic stuff and all the technical advance that they did with their music, where I felt like the first half was a little sluggish at points with a lot of the, you know, the obligatory, this is how we met, this is how we formed. I feel like that one of the big issues with this doc is that it's way too gosh dang long. It's basically the whole show, but 2 hours at some point did feel like it was starting to get a little bit draggy by the very end.
See, I didn't feel that at all. In fact, my complaint is that I felt that in the last half, it kind of brushed over the history of, well, my favorite albums of theirs, Hello Nasty, which was my introduction to them, entirely skips over the production of To the Five Boroughs, and even, like, oddly enough, their final album, A Hot Sauce Committee, which I think I've been really itching to talk about the process of making that as, like, Adam was sick.
I completely agree with Mike, actually. Yeah. But there's going to be a lot of people here that full on 2 hours is going to be too much for. I do, Justin, you yourselves were like, I like Two Beastie Boys a lot. I wouldn't call myself a fanatic. I was kind of a fanatic. I was one of my favorite bands ever. The degree to which I was anticipating this, when it was over, I was like, I really wanted like another hour or two of this, because there was so much that went uncovered, especially in, like Mike said, the last couple albums. But if you keep watching, about 2 or 3 minutes into the credits, it suddenly cuts to about 10 minutes of deleted scenes.
Oh yeah, it's great stuff too. It's like not crucial story stuff, but just kind of fun tidbits and looks at sketches with interesting celebrity cameos, like Michael K. Williams playing Bob Dylan at one point,
and having like guest stars in the audience pop up at some of their shows, famous actors who would pop up like they were going to ask them a question. I was like, okay, I see why you cut it out of the thing. And the thing overall, you can tell it was a different vibe seeing it live. There were a lot of you had to be there jokes that were clearly going on, and they tried to capture them in the film with the idea that Spike Jones is sitting up in the production booth and is having technical issues, but it's just kind of a running joke they're having fun with, clearly, because it's the last show.
And it was great that even though you see the teleprompters, it feels natural.
Adam and Mike D are great stage presences, and they really carry the show. But honestly, that's actually kind of a point where I had a little issue with this too, is that while they're really carrying this, it really didn't feel like it was a Spike Lee directed joint. I mean, Spike Jones directed joint at all. Because
that would have been a
very
different film.
Yes, very different. But that's the thing, is that it didn't feel like Spike Jones's touch was really on this very much, because it is a stage show. So other than a few very well edited together sequences with all the montages and that stuff, it really just felt like anybody could have directed this.
There's a lot of things here, especially if you're a fan of the scene in general, that are fun. Like, I forgot that Kate Schellenbach, who was a member of Luscious Jackson, was the original drummer. They get into her early on, and the audience remembers because they start applauding the moment they mention her name. Yeah. Oh, fuck. That's right. The chick from Luscious Jackson. They were terrific. Never quite reached the heights of the Beastie Boys, mind you, but hey, what are you going to do? There's a third thing this is really about, and it's about growing up and how it's good to change and it's good to become a different person over time. It's not wrong to change your mind about things as you grow and adapt and listen. And that's a big part of it. And it kind of culminates with someone calling out Horowitz for saying, well, you did that song Girls, which is very misogynistic and horrible, as Justin pointed out. And also one of the most annoying earworm songs of all time.
Yep.
And years later, you're doing all this very pro-feminist stuff. I think you're a fucking hypocrite. He's like, yeah, I'd rather be a hypocrite than just stay the same forever.
Which is a great fucking quote.
Yeah, that's a fantastic quote.
And that's what they did. They changed. We grew up with them. We watched society grow up with them. And it's kind of a fascinating third tier take that gives this whole thing a sense of, I don't know, zen, that I know for sure Adam Yauch would have appreciated very much. But let's go to final thoughts and let Mike McAllister, who just is dying to talk about the Beastie Boys. He wants this to be a 3-hour podcast.
Absolutely. I was really excited about this thing too. This was like the only reason to get Apple TV Plus, in my opinion. I would have loved to see the actual stage show, because I know they took it to a couple different cities. This is a great doc. I really love it. It's a great stage show. I love the presence these guys have, chemistry. And yeah, you do kind of feel Spike Jones's touch very subtly. I know it's hard to really pinpoint what makes a Spike Jones-directed stage show, but you definitely feel his presence there. And really, it is a celebration of great music, these really innovative artists who no two albums sounded the same, really. Despite being hip-hop, which tends to sound repetitive to me, these guys really evolved and tried interesting things more than most rap groups did. And it's a celebration of their careers, celebration of friendship, it's a celebration of these really cutting-edge artists as they grew over time to more enlightened people, more creative people, of getting away from that obnoxious frat boy image. If I was around at the time that came out, I probably would have been annoyed with that too. And then, like you, Chris, I would have caught on to it later on by Check Your Head or even Ill Communication, which is a perfect album. I'm going to give this thing 9 out of 10 vinyl records.
Bradley, what about you?
I enjoyed this. I actually consumed a ton of music, and I always think I'm a huge fan of something. Yeah, Beastie Boys, Hello Nasty! And then the stage starts, and they're like, back in the 80s. And I'm all, whoa, I was just a child in the 80s. How do I know about the Beastie Boys? Did my dad listen to Girls and Fight for Your Right to Party? That doesn't make sense.
He probably did, yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised. So I always like the journey of discovering how bands come together and why bands come together. You know, you have your usual reasons. God gave me a guitar and I'm his prophet. Scary. A little scary, that reason. Or I belong on that stage because I should be famous. Also kind of scary. Those usually end in overdose. So listening to, we were just three friends that like to hang out together and party. I loved it. I love that kind of reason to create, whether it's music or anything else. So I was enthralled by this. Hello Nasty, as you pointed out, Mike, that was my introduction. I had no idea that was one of their last albums until seeing this. So I enjoyed the history. Favorite moment was the creation of Sabotage. That's the only time they really got into the in-depth process of how everything starts out with a bass line, because that's your heartbeat, you know, to the music, and music is life, yada, yada, yada. I'm going to sound like I'm on drugs in a minute if I go on. So I'm going to say I'm giving this, 8 beats, 10 times that the Beastie Boys dropped. So there you go.
Justin, Zarian, give it to us.
All right, I'm going to give it to you. And I don't want to sound like I'm being the curmudgeon here. I just feel like...
Too late.
I know. Like, let me just say this again. I like the Beastie Boys a lot. In fact, one thing that I wish they got to talk more about was their music videos in terms of the production of those, because I am a big music video junkie, and I love Beastie Boy music videos. They're all so entertaining and energetic, and heck...
I was going to say, yeah, there's a Criterion box set that unfortunately has not gotten a Blu-ray release, just DVD, but is all the Beastie Boys videos.
Well, then I need to pick that up, because one of my favorites actually is one of their last ones they did, the Make Some Noise video that Yauch directed as well. Yeah, it's a fun little entertaining cameo-filled little celebration of the Beastie Boys. This one... It just, again, it couldn't shake the fact that this really wasn't much of a movie. It's really a stage show that's filmed. And while it's a very good stage show, it's got great sound mixing, it's got very entertaining elements, it's got very insightful elements, Adam and Mike are great hosts. I just kept waiting for it to do something else that really wowed me or got me deeper, and it never quite got there. I will say the strongest parts are the parts when they get into their introspective growing up moments. Like, that thing that you mentioned, Chris, was one of the highlights of the whole movie. I thought that was really, really profound. Everything else, I just kind of felt like it was the greatest hits of their most famous parts, and it felt like there was just so much more that there just wasn't time for in this documentary. I mean, I enjoyed it for what it was, but I also admit that it kind of was losing me at points where I'm just like, yeah, I guess it's just kind of background noise for a little point. So I'm going to give this 6.5 out of 10 embarrassing cameos in films that Adam really wishes he could forget.
they're like, don't seek out this film. I'm like, I'm totally seeking out that film now. Totally. I did not know that was a thing. Sorry, I will find you, Lost Angels. I will.
That's the thing when you see it, you're just like, yeah, I don't think I would make that same reaction either if I was crashing a car into water. It's the,
yeah, this for me gave me almost everything that I wanted, except for, as Micah had asserted, for it to be considerably longer than it was. I would have watched a whole series of these, where like 1 hour per week for a month. I'd be like, yes, please, bring that. Let's make this a whole, we'll get like the old-timey Civil War photographs and the music playing over it. It'll be great. I know there were a lot more stories. And in fact, the book has been on my wish list, like of like, oh, it's one of these things I got to remember to pick up eventually. It's got so much more of that stuff in it. They're just such likable people. They're people you're like, man, they feel like they went through that period of being completely obnoxious rock stars early, and then went, I don't want to be a completely obnoxious rock star. I just want to be a normal fucking guy that's like loves doing, hanging out with my friends and doing my art, and turned into the really nice guys that we know of now, which really feel like dudes I hang out with. They feel like you guys. They're just decent fellas that you can go have a beer with, unless they're like Justin Zarian and don't drink. But
I'm the manager watching over them.
Just get a cranberry and a water, yeah.
But I didn't want this to end. Even I was so great. I was like so disappointed. I'm sitting through the credits and then 10 minutes of deleted scenes start and I'm like, hooray!
Yeah, exactly. A lot of fun.
It's like, maybe it's never going to end. Maybe it was all a lie. It's not even, clearly not for everybody, but for me, a big fan of the Beastie Boys, I thought this was just wonderful. I'm giving it 9 and only like 1 star. I'm literally not giving this a 10 only because I could feel moments where it felt like we're missing something, where there was cuts that we didn't see of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And this just made me want to really have been there more than anything.
Yeah.
So it's only losing 1 star for that. Never quite creates the illusion completely, but 9 out of 10 completely adorable pictures of the Beastie Boys and Run DMC getting all huggy with each other.
Oh, that stuff was great.
They were great friends. I didn't even know that. There's all these pictures of them just like all over each other, like, woo!
Hopefully they'll make a sequel where it's a Run DMC story, because I'd be all for that, too.
Yeah.
I'm
almost worried that they're going to do a biopic treatment of this, of their story in the book, and I worry only because it'll probably come out like The Dirt did on Netflix, where I'm just like, oh boy, the movie that almost made me vomit out loud twice. I'm just like,
ugh. Oh god.
Wait, are you used to vomiting without a sound?
Instead of a quiet gagging, like you know, it's like a...
What have you been up to, Tommy Lee? And he's like, nothing. And then the movie continues.